You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Green Left Weekly Radio.
There's one newspaper that is independent of powerful capitalist interests, and that is Green Left Weekly.
It's the people's voice, committed to human and civil rights, ecological sustainability, democracy and equality. It presents ideas that the mainstream media won't.
Green Left is a leading source of local, national and international news with analysis, discussion and debate to strengthen the anti-capitalist movement.
It helps expose the lies of the capitalist press and puts the voices of the marginalised and the oppressed at the centre of fighting for a better world and helps us understand the political developments unfolding around us.
Good morning, listeners. You are listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR 855 AM, and you are joined today by myself, Jacob Andjwafa, as one of your presenters, and then we have
Stephanie, also here today this morning. Good morning, listeners.
Good morning. Maybe I'll get you to start off with an acknowledgement of country,
yeah.
Steph.
Of course. So before we go any further, 3CR and Green Left wish to acknowledge that this show is being broadcasted from the stolen land of the Wurundjeri Woiwurrung people, the original rightful sovereign owners, storytellers and caretakers of the land. Australia was founded on genocide and dispossession of the first people, and we recognise that this genocide is ongoing. As socialists, we pledge to actively support decolonisation. We stand with all the First Peoples in their struggle for justice and rights to their land.
So, just to announce what we have coming up on our program, so we're probably going to go, we'll start off by discussing some headline news. There's actually quite a lot of news stories to kind of cover, and I think actually for the start of the program, we'll actually go into some of the positive news that has actually happened, especially in the United States and Britain, where I think there's actually some positive things to discuss. I mean, everything seems a bit gloomy. I mean, with, you know, the genocide in Gaza, you know, the war in Iraq against Iran seems to have no end, despite the fact that there was a ceasefire agreement sort of kind of agreed to. Things seem to be, hostilities appear to be kind of resuming. And then we also have the rise and support for One Nation. So We're going to be interviewing Marybeck councillor Sue Bolton about the rise of One Nation around 7:15 a.m. or 7:20. Then at 7:40, we're going to be speaking to Izzy, we've actually previously had Izzy on the program, but we're going to be having her on again. She's a school teacher, an AAU member, and we're going to be talking about Labor's recent enterprise agreement offer to teachers, essentially rejecting the Australian Education Union's advice to accept it. So we're going to be finding out. That was actually a very positive kind of development. And it's actually quite exciting that, you know, there might be another wave of industrial action from teachers, and hopefully they can actually secure a better agreement than what the state Labor government has been prepared to offer. Now, the next, I guess we're going to start off with a bit of a roundup of some of the positive kind of news stories. This Monday, British Prime Minister Keir Starmer had announced his resignation, and this follows the results of, I think, the Macclesfield by-election that happened in Britain recently, where Andy Burnham basically got elected in a majority. Now, to give you a bit of background on Andy Burnham, so Andy Burnham has previously been a Labor Party MP. He did serve as the chief secretary to the treasurer. He's also served in many ministerial positions, but he has been kind of known as basically a mayor in Greater Manchester, and he served that role from 2017 to 2026, and he was also an MP from 2001 to 2017. Now, He's kind of associated with the soft left faction of the Labor Party. Now, the fact that he has essentially gotten elected as an MP again, means that he will likely become the next Labour kind of leader in Britain. Now, obviously, there's a few things to sort of unpack here. I mean, Keir Starmer has been incredibly unpopular as a British, as a Labour Prime Minister. Yeah. He's also been, I would say, you know, we think that Albanese is bad, but I actually would argue that Keir Starmer was even worse.
100%.
Especially on a number of key issues. The genocide in Gaza being one. You know, the fact is he had once argued that during the height of the genocide in Gaza, he argued that, I think Israel has a right to cut water, access to water and electricity. Those kind of comments. He's obviously like Albanese has sort of tried to play both sides, tried to say, oh, yes, you know, I support a ceasefire, etc. But, you know, he's been completely swarmy in a lot of ways in terms of responding to kind of other issues. The other kind of issues in terms of his record has been his cuts to welfare. You know, he's repeatedly introduced cuts to disability benefits. He's also introduced, he had not backed down from the benefits cap. And in fact, went even further, basically continuing the Tory policy of cutting the child benefits cap. And the other element of his rule is, you know, in Britain, there is this rising support of reform. There is actually the possibility that reform could, Nigel Farage could be the next Prime Minister of Britain. And, you know, the thing about what the Labour Party under Keir Starmer has been willing to do is it's basically conceded to reform on every question around immigration, because there's this whole saying that, you know, Nigel Farage will go on about how much, you know, reform hates migrants, how much we want to block immigration, etc. And Keir Starmer's response will be, well, how bad do you want to do it? Like, you know, maybe we can work a kind of compromise here. Like, you know, that has been essentially Keir Starmer's record. Now, Andy Burnham does reflect a bit more, you know, a bit more of a stronger response to reform than what Keir Starmer has been willing to do. I'm not that convinced that he'll be much different, but I do think the fact his popularity does reflect a certain mood. And, you know, the fact he received an overwhelming majority in that electorate indicates that people do want an alternative to reform, and people do see Andy Burnham as an alternative. So I think, you know, it'll be important for, you know, the left-wing forces to kind of relate to this sentiment, to actually build a kind of mass movement against reform. So I think, overall, it's positive. And I think I think the last thing I'd say about Keir Starmer is he's probably one of the most uncharismatic politician I've ever seen. Like, there's almost like, the funny thing about him is the joke has been that there's almost like there was a segment about in the lead up to the last British election that John Oliver did where basically he basically made the joke that actually he's completely unremarkable in every way, has no charisma whatsoever.
It's kind of lacking. It'll be interesting as well to see. I'm kind of sceptical that there'll be any shift in terms of Labour's response and repression of Palestine protesters, and especially Palestine Action Group, and just the horrific repression that's happened there, and the detainment of people on, terrorism charges, but like the terrorism that, you know, people have been accused of in particular has just been, you know, about trying to save lives. So there's been a strong argument made that it's not actually terrorism. And as many people listening to 3CR would know, branding something as terrorism is a classic tactic used by a lot of global north governments to basically oppress any kind of left and progressive movement, especially when it's around war or human rights, like refugee rights, or and in the case of Palestine as well. So it comes as no surprise, but it'll be interesting to see if there's any change in response, but I'm not sure that there will be, but we'll see.
Now, the other positive news story, and this just happened actually recently, just in the past few days, and this has happened in the United States, but essentially a wave of progressive candidates endorsed by the Democratic Socialists of America and New York City Mayor Zoran Mamdani, won massive majorities in New York. So we had DSA members Claire Raldes and Daria Liza Avila Shalva defeated two Democratic establishment picks for Congress. We also had Antonia Reynoso and five-term incumbent Adriana Espelette. Those are the two establishment picks that got defeated. Sorry, I misread that. Now, other DSA candidates, including Palestinian America Abia Kowaz, running for New York State Senate, notch wins further down ballot. And, of course, we also had the Mamdani-backed candidate, Brad Lander, who's not really a socialist, probably more of a centrist, but he did defeat another kind of congressional incumbent. So, you know, this is actually a very kind of positive development in a lot of ways. Obviously, there will be political limitations because I think a lot of these candidates are still running under the Democratic ballot line. But, I mean, I think, you know, what this kind of reflects is a very kind of progressive sort of mood for change. There's a certain momentum, especially following Zoran Mamdani's victory as mayor in New York City. So, yeah, I think this is actually quite a positive kind of development. For all the kind of shift in right-wing politics in the United States under, you know, the Trump administration, it's good to see that there is actually, you know, there is kind of mood for actually something better and something more progressive. I know Steph wanted to share another positive news story.
Oh, and now I'm wondering which one that was.
Oh, that was the one about the podcaster or Channel 9.
Of course. And I'm sure, for local listeners, and I'm aware sometimes we have people listening internationally, but in Australia we've had a celebrity, and look, he's bit of a personality in the realm of what would you call it, like pop media, I suppose. But we've had Karl Stefanovic, who was forced to resign from Channel 9's Today Show, which is like a breakfast show, after he interviewed on his podcast far right extremist, I'm just going to call in that, Tommy Robinson, and that was a little bit too on the nose even for Channel 9, and so they did force him to resign. But like, just for a bit of context, as some listeners may not be aware of just like the significance of this, but it's good to see that there's some accountability and some limits around how far you can go with interviewing people. But yeah, Tommy Robinson is like, I think, probably most listeners will be aware of just how problematic his views are, but yeah, very much far right. During the interviews, which was quickly taken down from all the platforms that the podcast was uploaded to. But Stefanovic said to Robinson that he admired his tenacity and courage, and God, I love you, and trying to stand up for what you believe is right, and at no point challenging the views expressed by Tommy Robinson. And look, this isn't surprising. He's had other very far right influences and politicians on his podcast, including disgraced shock jock. Well, I don't know that Kyle necessarily identifies himself as disgraced, but I won't. The behaviour has been, for sure. Kyle Sandilands, Pete Evans, and Tony Abbott, John Howard, and Jacinta Price. So, like, probably some of the most right-wing characters in Australia in terms of media and politics have been on his show. And then Stefanovic has also, at one point during one of his podcast shows, he apologised for supporting Channel 9's COVID-19 vaccine campaign. So there's been I don't think the forced resignation was just about the interview with Robinson, but it's been like one thing after another, just really poor judgment on Stefanovic's part. And unsurprisingly, while the podcast was episode was taken down, but not before Pauline Hanson reshared it. And of course, the podcast, the interview with Tommy Robinson was all about anti-immigration, anti-Muslim, and yeah, just a lot of racism. And then there's also been a public reaction from billionaire James Packer, who I think is maybe very much friendly towards Stefanovic, but James Packer has said, I think it's pretty hypocritical not to allow Carl editorial independence, especially on something I didn't think was that bad. And so I think that's pretty out of touch with, even mainstream media, which are very right-wing and very problematic. This is too far even for them. So. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I thought that the satire kind of website that people are probably aware of, The Chaser, which I think always has really really good political commentary in its satire. They did a funny news story, satire news story about Carl, where it basically says nation braces for the world's most annoying I've been cancelled tour, because and they say here, as reports suggest, Australia's most annoying TV host, Carl Stefanovic, has been axed from Channel 9. The nation has begun to brace for the inevitable tour where one of the country's largest podcasters claims to have been silenced. And, you're going to go on about, the political correctness, while he's just going to get, even though he's been cancelled by Channel 9, I'm 100% sure he's going to continue to get some kind of level of platform or some level of publicity about his podcast and so on. And, it's kind of like, Carl Stefanovic loves to describe himself as, I think he once loved to describe himself as he's like the Joe Rogan.
Even though it's a name he gave himself, it is a funny name. So I'll give him that. But it's horrendous. Yeah.
But I think it's a good segue into the interview that we'll do with Sue later, because, one of the things about these far-right kind of grifters is they love to claim that they're being silenced by cultural kind of Marxism and the left and, but really, in reality, they're getting the free ride with from the billionaires from the corporations who back them. I'm sure he'll probably address some One Nation election launch or event.
Maybe with Kyle Sandilands as well. They'll just all team up.
The most horrible right wing people are all going to get together and basically be part of this big drift in right wing politics. That's going to be a good segue into, I'm going to go play a few announcements and we'll get Sue Bolton on the line to actually talk about this big right wing push and actually how we can actually resist. You're listening to Green Left Radio.
There's people, like you said, have been on casual for 7 years. Well, it's supposed to be casual employment. People want full time jobs. They don't want to be sitting there casual, not knowing they're going to get any days, any leave or whatsoever. Especially you look at all the casuals in our industry at the moment. They're sitting home. People want full time employment, and they should be entitled to full time employment.
And look at all the people who were used and abused as casuals in the aged care sector and all the problems that are facing people now and all the deaths that are following.
In the meatworks, a lot of that's casuals, labour hire, you've got blokes travelling around, We want full-time positions and people want it. We want to be full-time employed. You want to have your Christmas holidays. You want to have time with your family. But when you're a casual, you get none of that.
You're listening to 3CR Community Radio 855 AM on digital and online. 3CR Radical Radio.
Kefirs are Palestinian scarves, and they're a symbol of support for justice for the Palestinian people. From the traditional black and white kefir to an array of modern designs, explore the range and order online or drop by 3CR during business hours. We're your support for the rights of Palestinians. Go to kufias.org.au. That's kufias.org.au. A 3CR supporter.
Okay, you're listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR 855 AM. And we're joined today for our first live interview. We have Sue Bolton, Marybeck councillor, and who is also the social science candidate for the upcoming state election campaign about the rise of Hanson. Sue is also part of a Broad-based anti-racism rally that's been organised for July 25th in Broadmeadows. So good morning, Sue.
Hi, everybody.
Good morning, Sue.
Hi.
Hello. Thanks for joining us bright and early. Yeah, it's lovely to have you on the show, of course. And we've actually just been talking about, the rise of the far right and just how we really need to organise and resist and fight back. What are your comments on the rise of One Nation and why it represents a dangerous shift in right-wing politics?
Well, I think there has been a lot of commentary, a lot which is true and a lot and some which is not really true. But I think rather than going over stuff that people have already heard, I think it is a very dangerous shift because it's not just One Nation itself. It is trying to drive all politics to the right and take back gains which we have won over decades, which working class people have won, whether it be around workers' rights, around environmental issues, climate issues, or whether it be around anti-racism, women's rights, trans rights. You know, like there's the whole of rights which we have won over the years. And they might not be, we might not have won everything we want to win or need to win for true human liberation, but we have won certain rights. And the whole development of Pauline Hanson's One Nation and this whole shift of support towards Pauline Hanson's One Nation and other parts of the far right means that it's an attempt to roll back all of those gains that we've won. And you can sort of see that with Pauline Hanson's monoculture comments. That's really what she wants to do. She wants to roll back all anti-racism gains that we've won in the past. So it is really dangerous for us, and we do need to organise. But I also think we've got to separate out the different parts of the support that's gathering behind One Nation, because they're clearly the solid, racist, hardline, right-wing, you know, Pauline Hanson supporters, but they're also more recent people who've been moving towards supporting One Nation. And I think there is an element of generally being pissed off and the opinion, you know, seeing One Nation rise in the opinion polls makes it more acceptable to say that you're voting One Nation or leaning towards voting One Nation and holding your nose and pretending that you don't support the other elements of One Nation, but you've got a particular reason why you're supporting One Nation. And I actually do think we have to, the left and progressive movement does have to work to peel people away from supporting One Nation. And I know lots of people are having discussions, arguments with family members and workmates who might be starting to go towards the One Nation camp. And this isn't just really Aussie, Anglo people moving towards One Nation. It also includes a lot of migrants as well. And it might be, migrants who've got a very right-wing outlook, or it might be migrants who think, oh, I'm one of the good migrants because I'm not brown, or I'm not Muslim, or I don't receive any Centrelink benefits, or, you know, whatever the reason is. And also some of those people may not even fully recognise, if they're newer migrants, may not even fully recognise all of what One Nation stands for.
Yeah. So, Sue, yeah. I want to kind of jump in on that, because there's kind of a few points there that I kind of want to unpack, because I think one of the kind of important things in terms of this, about how One Nation has kind of been campaigning on this kind of racist agenda. So to kind of summarise, you know, there's this whole pushback against First Nations rights, you know. Every One Nation candidate I've heard has a consistently anti-First Nations viewpoint, you know, going down to the fact that they don't agree with the concept of acknowledgement of countries, claiming it's divisive. There's obviously the Islamophobic element. One of the more powerful kind of arguments that's kind of seeped into the consciousness, and I think, you know, there are even migrants who are falling in for this argument, especially. But there's this whole question around immigration and housing, and I kind of want to hear your kind of comments on that how we counter these arguments around immigration and housing, because it's been so normalised that it's almost become like common sense. Like, for example, I mean, I was looking at Reddit the other day, and there was like a big discussion about immigration and housing, and, you know, a lot of people sort of jumping in on this argument that, you know, we have to slow down immigration so we can fix the housing market. And, you know, want to kind of hear your comments as well about how the major parties have actually enabled this.
Well, I think the major parties have enabled this by saying that the only reason there's housing crisis is because there's a lack of housing supply and we're not building enough housing, and they don't want to look at the marketisation of housing. And, you know, that's really the central thing. So a lot of people don't understand why the housing crisis exists. And so it does look sensible to people to think that, oh, more people are coming to Australia, therefore there's not enough houses for them all. It does look like that when there's nothing like that at all. And this is an argument which has been used more in the past around jobs and migration. People used to say, oh, well, it's because of migrants coming to Australia that there's unemployment at times when there's been high unemployment in Australia. But actually, no, that's not the reason why unemployment exists. It's to do with how capitalism works. And I think the housing issue is exactly the same. Now, I think there are a lot more people now who are aware of the fact that there are all these vacant dwellings. Something like 10% of dwellings are vacant in Australia, in Victoria, and because there have been these public housing campaigns. But I think there's also a lack of experience with public housing amongst working class people, because governments have been dismantling public and demolishing public housing, selling it off, not building it, only focused on the market. And so I think for a lot of people, it does look as if housing is the cause. Lack of housing a result of migration, when it's nothing of the kind. And even some practices or lifestyle changes some people have had since COVID have also reduced housing, such as, a lot of people do work from home now, or at least part of the time. That might mean some bedrooms that might have once been rented out to people are not rented out to people now. The whole advent of Airbnb has taken rental housing, like long-term rentals, out of the market. And so that means, you know, people in a lot of areas, especially areas where there's a lot of tourists, don't have access to long-term rental housing. And once upon a time, governments built public housing in rural areas to make sure that workers had places to live. They don't do that anymore, or it's very, very little, so little that it's not enough to solve anything. And then, of course, a lot of people just don't have the experience of public housing. There is an answer to this for people who are prepared to listen, and that is we had the COVID experiment. Well, I mean, COVID wasn't an experiment, but COVID meant there was a big housing experiment in Australia and in other countries because temporary migrants were sent home, international students had to go home, tourists weren't able to come here, Australians who were living overseas weren't allowed to come back to Australia. So we had a population decrease, but housing never went down in cost substantially. There was still people sleeping rough. There were still people who were homeless. There were still people who couldn't afford housing because it's not migration that's causing, or lack of supply that's causing the issue. It's how housing is distributed through the market and developers trying to deliberately drive up the cost of housing so they can make a buck, and governments refusing to do anything about that.
Yeah, 100%. So, and not just developers, but everyone involved with it. It's real estate. Like, the entire thing is based on a market. And I was reading recently how banks on average make $200,000 in profit just off interest from each home loan in Australia. So that's just disgusting. Like, no wonder we can't, no wonder people can't afford housing. Like, and it has nothing to, like you said, it has nothing to do with migration. And I guess, like, I'm just sort of thinking in terms of how we respond to people when they're making that argument. Like, a question would be, well, if we stop migration tomorrow, would you be able to afford your rent? Would you be able to afford your mortgage? And the answer is no, not without, like, the interventions that we actually need. And it has nothing to do with migration. It has to do with regulation and moving away from a market model. I was just really curious about your perspective on how you think we can fight back against a right-wing shift in politics, and how can we resist One Nation?
Well, I think there's probably a lot of different things we have to do, and we do have to resist this push because I think people coming out and showing they disagree will have an impact on some people who are just very loose supporters or just flirting with the idea of supporting One Nation. And I think there's probably a few things we need to do. I mean, obviously, we do need to get some facts out there through alternative media like Green Left Radio, 3CR, Green Left Media and other left and progressive sources of information. But also we do need to come together and resist. And I do think it is good to do counter rallies like was organised in Mooney Ponds the other week when Pauline Hanson comes to town for a fundraiser, et cetera. But I also think that's not sufficient by itself because you close down a One Nation fundraiser, but the thing is Pauline Hanson's in people's heads, or some people's heads, not everyone's heads, of course. So we need to do the counter rallies. We need to do some general rallies against racism like we're planning in Broadmeadows, in different communities and in the city. And once upon a time, like a long time ago, I think it might have been 1998, when Pauline Hanson was doing a barnstorming tour around the country, Trades Hall in Melbourne organised a massive rally against One Nation. Now, politics was a bit soft. I've forgotten the exact theme of the rally, but it was clearly against racism and One Nation, even though it was a bit on the soft side, the politics. But, you know, Trades Hall is very different now. Is much more of an electoral machine for Labor. But in reality, that's what they should be doing, not just marginal seat campaigning for Labor. But we also need to be organising around the issues that are agitating and affecting people. I mean, that is another way of combating One Nation ideas, because people need to be organised, because often it's through being organised around issues that people start to focus on who's the real enemy. And the real enemy is not migrants, not First Nations people. It is the capitalists, the developers, the real estate industry, the banks, and the capitalist politicians who are trying to deny us housing by forcing us to rely purely on the market and other things like that. We also, it's also important to do what we can to build the union movement or rebuild the union movement or get sparking workers' rights activity in our workplaces, in our unions and so forth as well. And I think the decline in unions as a result of all of these outrageous anti-union laws that are still on the books also makes it harder for people to have contact with unions, let alone contact with good unions or campaigning unions. And people don't know, can't see what the cause of the problem is, especially when you don't see strong union campaigns and so forth. And so all of those things are things that we need to do. And some people are not prepared to listen to arguments. They've got just an emotional feeling like all the politicians are fucked, and but One Nation, Pauline Hanson, is somehow honest or anti-establishment. We have to also try and debunk that idea that One Nation is anti-establishment.
Yep.
They're establishment as they come. They've got all the billionaires supporting them.
Yeah. So Sue, we got to wrap up actually into the kind of because we've got another interview coming up soon. So Connie, please just tell us quickly about the upcoming forum on Tuesday, the 30th of June, organised by Socialist Alliance, and the anti-racism rally you are part of organising on Saturday, July 25th.
Well, coming up this coming Tuesday at 6:30 at the Resistance Centre in Swanston Street, Melbourne. 407 Swanston Street. We've got a public meeting on resisting Pauline Hanson and the right. And we've got Giselle Hanna, who's State Secretary of the CPSU, comes from a rank and file group in the union originally, and has written a big statement against One Nation on the CPSU social media channels. We've got Deepak Joffe, who is going to be speaking, and he's from Hindus for Human Rights and has been campaigning against racism within the Indian community because there's a racist government in India. But he's also got an interest in fighting against One Nation and the far right in Australia as well, and myself speaking, and we are likely to have a fourth speaker as well. So that will be specifically focusing on trying to build resistance against the far right. And then the second thing is we've got this anti-racism rally in Broadmeadows on Saturday, the 25th of July. And the main theme of the rally is unite against racism, migrants are welcome. And it will be in front of Broadmeadows Town Hall at 2 p.m. If you're part of a group that would like to endorse the rally, please let us know. You can contact Green Left Radio and message can come through to let them know that you're part of a community group that would like to endorse the rally, because we really do want it to be broadly supported, both by people in the region of Broadmeadows, Craigieburn, Mirrabeck, etc., but also well beyond there. We want to try and make it a big rally, and so we want people from outside the area. It will protest in front of Broadmeadows Town Hall, and then there'll be a march.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much, Sue. And we'll advertise the details for all those events when we get to the Green Left activist calendar again. Thank you very much for being on our program. I think, it's very important to have these conversations, especially in light of the rising support for One Nation. You know, 3CR will be at the forefront of supporting any resistance to Hanson's, you know, pro-billionaire, racist kind of politics. And, you know, I think we need the broadest possible movement to push back against it. So thank you very much, Sue, for being on our program.
Thank you.
Thanks, Sue.
Yep, so we're just speaking to Marybeck Councillor Sue Bolton, and who's also running as a state Socialist Alliance candidate for the seat of Broadmeadows for the upcoming state election. So I'm just going to play quick for your announcements and we'll get on to our next interview.
Being a 3CR subscriber is vitally important to keeping us community-controlled, grassroots and on-air 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year.
Every 3CR show is a progressive voice that enriches and informs our communities.
From gardening and music to current affairs and First Nations voices, we broadcast expert community knowledge, offering perspectives beyond the mainstream media.
Subscribe today to be part of community-owned and community-controlled media.
Show your solidarity. Subscribe.
Go to 3cr.org.au or call 9419 8377.
All right, you're listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR 855 AM. And so we're going right into our second live interview for the program. So we have Isabella on the program, who is a school teacher and AU member and is also part of Fight the Crisis, which is a rank and file group of teachers basically fighting for better conditions and a part of campaigning for industrial action within the AU. So we have her on the program to talk about, you know, the recent vote that just came out. So yeah, good morning, Isabella.
Good morning. Nice to be here again. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So maybe to kind of start off, Victorian teachers and education support staff voted to reject Labor's enterprise agreement offer on June 19th. This was essentially as well as a rejection of the Australian Education Union's advice to accept it, i.e. the leadership of that union. Close to 58% voted to reject the Victorian government's school and principals agreement and dated 2026. And can you tell us why, you know, AU members, you know, voted to reject this agreement in such a majority?
Yeah, absolutely. It simply didn't address the key demands which are going to work towards fixing the crisis in our schools. It's really that simple. We know that this agreement that we're working on at the moment is a real watershed moment, and we need to do some serious work to reform the system and the way that staff, and by default students, are treated in that system. Our working conditions are our students' learning conditions, and so in order for those to be really good and strong and sustainable, we need to see reductions to class sizes, we need to see reductions to face-to-face teaching time, we need to see our education support staff paid for their lunch breaks, and everyone needs to see a salary that catches up to inflation and to other states' education workers' salaries. The proposed agreement was voted down because it just did not sufficiently address those issues.
Thanks, Isabella. And, you know, I think for a lot of people who've been, like, sort of following this, it was so exciting to see just so many people rejecting this offer.
Yeah.
And really fantastic to see, people just uniting and standing together. And I think hopefully it sends a strong message to the union leadership as well, because they've been very unhelpful in terms of actually supporting members' interests, I would say. And you are part of Fight the Crisis. What can you tell us about the weaknesses of that proposed agreement, and what are you hoping to see instead?
So I think what's really important, particularly for people who are perhaps not working in the education sector, is to talk about the pay offer, because it sounds like a really big number, right? 28 to 32% across the workforce sounds really significant. But it was firstly inequitable across staff. So for education support staff, that, let's say, 28% was not actually made up of 28% of base salary increases. It was around 21% of a base salary increase, and then a bunch of one-off payments that are sort of like bonuses. And so that, you know, that doesn't stand up when you go to apply for a mortgage or a credit card, or you're trying to show your bank statements for rental, applying for a rental property, etc. So it was inequitable, which the membership was really unimpressed by. And it also just did not catch up from how far behind we were left in our last agreement. We took a massive pay cut last time in real world terms, and so we need something that is going to actually catch us up to other states, not just for graduate teachers or the top of the scale, but for everyone across the industry. And we saw nothing on class sizes. We saw nothing on a reduction on face-to-face teaching hours, and we saw no paid lunch breaks for ES. So everyone, you know, looked at the agreement, and as you said, close to 58% of members said, no, this is not good enough. So, yeah, I'm incredibly proud of the show of solidarity that our membership has come out with and our willingness to fight, I guess. You asked, what do we really need? We need to see a staged reduction to class sizes. We understand that you can't, you know, turn around and say, right, tomorrow the class sizes are going to be this much smaller, because we don't have the staff to staff that. So it has to happen over a period of time. So we would like to see a agreement where we are heading towards a cap of 20. Research globally shows that that's kind of the gold standard for secondary class sizes, and it's fractionally smaller for primary schools. We know that teachers do an average of 12 hours unpaid overtime every week, and that's because they don't have time to do their marking and their planning and their report writing, etc., in school hours. So we need to see a reduction in face-to-face teaching hours so that staff have more time to do that really crucial work in work time. We should not have to take it home. And our ES staff need to be paid for their lunch breaks. It's wild to me, this myth that teachers are paid for lunch breaks because they have a duty of care and somehow ES don't. I don't think it would go down very well if an education support staff member said, oh, no, I can't help that kid who really needs support right now. I'm off the clock. None of them would ever do that, and so they should be being paid for their time.
Yeah. So can you tell us about, so Fight the Crisis is campaigning for another statewide strike on August the 4th. Can you tell us about the these campaign efforts, but also you can also reflect a bit on some of the campaign efforts that Fight the Crisis was part of in the lead up to this no vote carrying?
Yeah, absolutely. It was a slog towards the no vote. I mean, we do not have the money, resources and reach that the Yes campaign team had. So I'm really proud of the efforts of Fight the Crisis and their allies. It was a lot of social media. It was a lot of conversations on the ground. It was a lot of cold calling sub-branches or cold emailing reps at sub-branches and making those connections. And so I think that level of commitment and authenticity is what saw us successfully have so many conversations with so many members and sub-branches and eventually see this result. And that result was really clear. The membership made it incredibly clear that we are ready to say no and we're ready to fight. We saw in the Parbo earlier in the year, 90% of voting members said yes to various forms of industrial action, including stop work action. We saw the massive strikes in March, which were bigger and louder than I think anyone anticipated. And then sadly, after the no vote came through on Friday, two different motions at branch council calling for strike action in Term 3 were voted down by a majority. So this is really members course correcting. We are making it clear that we are ready for this fight. We are organising from the ground up because the union is its members. It always has been. It always will be. So members are making their voices heard. We've seen in the last 4 days over 25 sub-branches already pass a motion committing to taking strike action on the 4th of August. We welcome it happening earlier than that, but we needed to make it clear that we're serious about this.
Izzy, that's just fantastic to hear. And just, yeah, we're sending you all the solidarity and support. And it's marvellous to see, yeah, rank and file taking charge of their union and, yeah, and calling the shots because you should be. These are your lives and your conditions, but it's also the future of Australia, like Victoria's kids. And they, you know, they deserve a decent public education. So do you have any final comments for us before we wrap up?
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. We deserve to be able to proudly call ourselves the education state, but we are not there yet. We've got quite a way to go. To any members listening, I really urge you to check out Fight the Crisis on Instagram, pass our motion in your sub-branches committing to a strike for 24 hours on the 4th of August. If it ends up being called earlier than that, fantastic. But we are ready to call it on the 4th of August. So we will see you in the streets and let's make a real difference to our students and staff in government schools. We've already had this historical no vote, which is so exciting, and we need to hang on to that fervour and rage and fight for something that we can eventually vote yes to.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much, Izzy, for being on our program. And, yeah, all the solidarity to the teachers fighting for the agreement that you deserve.
Thank you so much. Thanks for your time. Thank you for having
me. All right. So we're just speaking to Izzy about, the recent, which I think this is a bit of a victory, because essentially what has happened is has been a rank and file revolt against the union leadership. And, you know, one thing to just put to sort of comment, especially since we've covered this for a while, I mean, one of our comrades, presenters, Mary, has very much been part of these fights because actually the last enterprise bargaining period where, you know, last time, the last enterprise bargaining period was actually a time where, you know, there was all this promise that teachers would kind of go on strike. And essentially what happened is in the lead up to this strike, the government made an offer and the AU leadership, Australian Education Union leadership, just stitched it up and just agreed to it without taking any kind of industrial action. You know, so many members were so frustrated by that. And in fact, a lot of people ended up leaving the union, which is very tragic. Like, sad. You know, I think people need to be part of the unions, even if they have a leadership that is, you know, right wing, might be pro-Labor and so on. And like, you know, we need people to be part of their trade unions because, you know, without having any kind of workplace density within your trade union, there's little hope of even resisting any kind of onslaught by the bosses. So, you know, I think, you know, and the fact that the fact that the no vote has probably given a lot more confidence to a lot of, you know, a lot of teachers who might have been becoming a bit cynical about the union. So I think this is a very kind of positive step forward in a lot of ways.
But hopefully people in other unions as well, because they're kind of seeing what's possible. I mean, ultimately, we are, you know, you are your union, and union leadership needs to be held accountable to its members. And it's okay to demand that. It's okay to organise and push back when you're offered something that isn't acceptable. It sends a really strong message and, reminds, like, the leadership should be serving the interests of their members first and foremost. And if they're not, don't stand for it.
All right. So I thought we will take a bit of a breather and we will play, I think we'll play a song. I was going to play a song by song titled Holly Weird by AJ Monette. And this is a album that has been featured in Matt Ward's sort of album wrap up. And Matt Ward wrote on Green Left, since Trump's Iran war cut off oil supplies, politicians worldwide have clamoured not to increase renewable energy, but to drill for more oil and gas. The consequences could be seen on May 20th as more than 17,000 people were ordered to evacuate from wildfires threatening their homes near Los Angeles. The fires were called the blaze that razed Hollywood stars' homes a year earlier, which is documented on LA-based AJ Mornet Sublime's new album, released 2 days later. On its track, Holly Weird, she intones from Palisades to Palestine. An actress compares the LA oceanfront to Gaza, never mentions the rougher border, the cutoff of 2,000 aid trucks, neglects to mention body bags, rubbles, or the Israeli snipers aimed at children. But everyone's donating their wardrobe to people without closets. Maybe, maybe socialism is on the way. What's the insurance policy for chickens coming home to roost? So, yeah, that's we'll go play this for the next 5 minutes. Sounds You're listening good. To Green Left Radio.
Taking. Four drunk travelers with bloodshot eyes sip on sweating beer cans just off the corner, waiting out the downtown protest. A trans woman in burgundy crop top with yellow geometric sunglasses and an ivory umbrella shielding the sun sips on iced tea from her straw. The universe is universing. The tow truck tricksters try to boot the tires of the people. Pawns peddling for the state. Every job can be undone by the will of the worker who sees fit to serve a good greater than petty personal pocket delusions. Troops are everywhere. A country torn apart, doom's growing degree.
my caption, get over, get ahead, culture, open tabs, generation, the echo chambers of greed. A bunch of individuals who want to go viral over commentary, all caps, baby boomer text threads. No spine having this. Dump as doorknobs. When people show you who they are, believe them.
All right. You're just listening to AJ Monnett, Holly Weird, which I thought was a really good track, actually. So it is now time for the Green Left Activist Calendar. So maybe we'll get Steph to read out the events for Friday.
Yeah.
I think I'm not sure if there's any events this Saturday. Oh, yeah. Don't see anything.
No. Yeah.
All right, so Friday and Tuesday, and then Friday and Tuesday. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'll do the next ones.
Yeah, sure. So, and just a reminder to listeners, if you don't already receive a little email update from us with the activist calendar for your area, please go to greenleft.org.au/events and you can register there because we send out emails with, depending on what area you live in, with local events. So, but yeah, coming up today, we have at 1 p.m. a rally, Picket Ansell and Modern Slavery, and that's at the Ansell head office at 478 Victoria Street, Richmond. There's a fundraiser tonight, 6 p.m. Poetic Justice for Emmable, and it's at Dakana, 99-101 Harding Street, Coburg. This coming Tuesday, we've got our public forum coming up by Socialist Alliance, Resisting One Nation, Building a Movement Against the Far Right, and that will be at 6:30 p.m. at the Resistance Centre, Level 5, 407 Swanson Street.
Yeah, now the next event I want, there's another event that's also been called on Tuesday, June the 30th. So outrageously, the City of Melbourne Council actually cancelled a booking for an event on Christian Zionism. This was an event organised by Anti-Zionism Australia. And so this is a massive attack on free speech. And, so they're organising a bit of a snap protest at 5 p.m. outside the Melbourne Town Hall.
Yeah, that's a conversation that needs to be had, I think.
Yeah. and then on Friday, July the 3rd, there's going to be a public forum commemorating the legacy of nuclear-dead nations in the Pacific 80 years on. And they'll be happening at 6 p.m. at Ballam Place at 15 Phoenix Street in Brunswick. And then on Saturday, July the 4th, there'll be a 3CR Community Day celebrating 50 years on the air. That'll be happening at 11 a.m. at Collingwood Town Hall at 140 Hoddle Street in Abbotsford. Then there'll be a rally, End US Imperialism, at 12 p.m. at the State Library in Swanson Street in the city. And then there'll be a fundraiser, Sons of Solidarity, Phil Monsoor and Sophie Nishizawa. That'll be happening at 7 p.m. at Dukakana at the 99-101 Harding Street in Coburg.
And then Sunday, July the 5th, we have some music for you. We have Best of Tarab, the 7th anniversary concert, 6 p.m. at the Brunswick Ballroom, 314 Sydney Road, Brunswick. Thursday next, on July the 9th, sorry, not next week, but the following, there's Melbourne protest against Modi. That's 5 p.m. Location is still to be advised at this stage. Friday, July 10th, we've got a film screening, Cuba After Castro, 6:30 p.m. at the Kathleen Syme Library and Community Centre in the Multipurpose Room 1. That's 251 Faraday Street, Carlton.
And then on Saturday, July the 18th, there's going to be a number of events. There's going to be the Sydney Accessible Tram Stops campaign, third anniversary. That'll be 11 a.m. at the corner of Wilson Avenue and Sydney Road. There'll also be, and in fact, we'll probably do an interview about this event. There's also going to be the People's World Cup event going to be happening, I think, in Footscray or the Western Suburbs. That's going to be, I just need to find the details about that, but it's been organised by the Borderlands sort of group. And then also there'll be the big New International Bookshop's big Red Book Fair. That'll be happening on Saturday, the 18th of July. And then the following week, there will be the anti-racism rally, which will be happening at 2 p.m. at the Broadmeadows Town Hall. And then on Saturday, August the 22nd, there'll be the 22nd annual Green Left Commie Debate. So book your tickets for that. There'll be publicity, and they'll be happening at 6:30 p.m. at the Brunswick Town Hall. And it'll be basically with the theme, We Should Blockade the USA.
That'll be a good night. Excellent.
All right. So I'm just going to go play a quick announcement. You're listening to Green Left Radio.
Being a 3CR subscriber is vitally important to keeping us community-controlled, grassroots and on-air 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year.
Every 3CR show is a progressive voice that enriches and informs our communities.
From gardening and music to current affairs and First Nations voices, we broadcast expert community knowledge, offering perspectives beyond the mainstream media.
Subscribe today to be part of community-owned and community-controlled media.
Show your solidarity. Subscribe.
Go to 3cr.org.au or call 9419 8377.
All right. So I was going to play. This is a special recording. The 3CR has been around for more than 50 years. I mean, in fact, it's been around longer than I have been alive. I'm going to go play a recording from S11. So S11 was one of the biggest kind of blockades where they basically where 25,000 or 30,000 activists basically stopped the World Economic Forum. And so, I'm going to play basically a recording for the next 3 minutes, which was actually taken from there. And it's about the police violence that happened at S11. So I hope the listeners enjoy.
And there are all sorts of groups of people watching. There are legal people taking notes, and there are observers, and generally people are just calling out, "We're not violent, why are you?" And there has been a high degree of police violence at today's protests.
At a number of points around the casino, groups of police essentially been pushing through protesters for seemingly no reason at all other than to just break the protesters up and in some instances injure them. So we're really, absolutely outraged by the actions of Victoria Police this morning. As far as we know, there's only been probably at maximum 3 arrests this morning. We believe 2 of those people have since been released without charge at this stage. We believe there's currently one person who is currently in police custody being questioned.
Friends of the Earth and a number of other groups will certainly be looking into calling for an investigation into policing methods following this morning's incident. There were police, as I said earlier, in full riot gear that without warning charged on people. There have been a number of injuries which are being cared for, and as I said, we'll certainly be looking into calling for a review of policing methods, because it's just not acceptable.
What we have here is the same form of peaceful assembly we had at the MUA dispute. We have had, as we all know, at least 50 years of basic understandings and protocols about how we do civil disobedience. The police come in and they remove people. If they believe they've acted unlawfully, they arrest them. That's the way we do things here. What the police have done, if we want to talk about un-Australian behaviour, is escalate from level 1 crowd control up to a situation of use of horses, and riot police in an entirely... There's been no notching up. There's just been go from first gear to fifth gear, and they've come out and, in effect, they've declared war on peaceful protesters. It's hard to paint it in any other terms than that.
We've been very concerned today that we have seen unreasonable, unjustified and inappropriate level of force used by Victoria Police. This force has been used against peaceful protesters who had been not warned that they were going to be, for example, baton charged or charged with police and given an opportunity to even make an informed decision about what was about to happen to them. We had Victoria Police just storming in with batons, thrashing people about the head, overhead use of batons, batons to the ribs, breaking hands. We've had people hospitalised because of severe facial injuries.
And you said the legal team is lodging complaints against the police action.
That's right. They've already written to the Ombudsman and they will be looking at legal action.
Okay, you're listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR 855 AM. And I'm going to go. So that was a recording of that was actually straight from 3CR back in the day, back in the year 2000 or 2000. I think it was it was in the year 2000. Which the S11 protest was basically one of the most significant sort of protests. But what was also quite significant about it was, the high levels of police violence. Like I heard there were. There were activists who actually suffered, life-threatening injuries as a result. And in fact, there were long-term kind of court cases where, they've finally won some kind of compensation from the Victoria Police. Also outrageously is, the Victorian Premier, I think, hosted a barbecue for all the police officers, thanking them for their service. Completely. S11 is kind of like one of those moments where it kind of really reveals, what the police actually are, which is in a sense they are armed guards of the state. They are there to uphold the status quo. They're not there to protect and serve your interests. They're not there to keep you safe necessarily.
No.
Their main role is to maintain order within the capitalist system. And in fact, I think cops are also quite unashamed about that because there's a funny slogan that they have if you see on their police cars and at police stations, which is I think something along the lines of maintaining the right. Now you can sort of read that as it's clearly meant to be interpreted as maintaining the rights or maintaining the right or
law and order,
so to speak. But you can also it has another double meaning of own of like oh yes yeah. they're here to maintain the right as in the right wing of politics. After that footage, we'll take a bit of a breather and we'll actually play another song. So I was going to play just a song by a band I quite like, Tennis, and this is Need Your Love.
Looking for someone to carry you in.
Okay, well, just list. That was you're listening to "Need Your Love" by Tennis. So now we're going to, we're getting into the last 15 minutes of the program. So I thought we'd go into a couple of news stories. So I think off the first story I will go off with is actually give a bit of an update on some of the tragic events happening in Venezuela right now, which has been just hit by a massive earthquake. Now there's kind
two,
of
it was two earthquakes.
Yeah,
actually.
Two earthquakes. Yeah. So the current kind of statistics right now is that authorities in Venezuela say, and this is drawing from Al Jazeera, authorities in Venezuela say at least 188 people have been killed and more than 1,500 injured after these two powerful earthquakes have shook the country on Wednesday night, damaging hundreds of buildings. Now, the death toll is also expected to climb higher as rescue teams work to find people under the rubble. Now, yeah, you know, this is a, you know, this is a tragedy, especially on top of, you know, the assault that Venezuela has been under by the United States, you know, the crippling kind of economic sanctions, you know, millions of people have left Venezuela over the past decade, because of the dire states of the economic situation. Then you also have had the recent, the start of the year, the kidnapping of Nicolas Maduro, who is really, at the end of the day, whatever criticisms people might have of him on the left, he is the democratically elected president of Venezuela. Yeah. Completely outrageous attack on their sovereignty. And the other thing that I just find a bit outrageous is in all of this, the United States have given their condolences, but of course they've donated more than $150 million in aid. Now, of course, you know, you can say, yeah, it's probably good that, you know, the United States is providing some kind of aid, but, you know, this is like a classic case of disaster capitalism. Like, you know, whenever a country in the global south is hit with a massive kind of disaster, you know, imperialist countries will always come into support, giving millions of dollars of aid, because at the end of the day, you know, they have access to all the resources. And then, of course, they make this kind of aid kind of conditional, and, you know, they use it as a way of actually aggressively pursuing more neoliberal economic policies in that country. You know, in the context of the fact that, you know, Venezuela is in this, you know, state of suspended sovereignty where it has really no sovereignty over its natural resources, etc.
Yeah.
You can bet 100% that, you know, this aid will be conditional in a lot of ways, and you know, they'll use it very much. So, you know, the United States will take it. It will very much take advantage of this situation, and you know, classic case of disaster capitalism, which, you know, this is something that Naomi Klein wrote about in her book, The Shock Doctrine. This is also something that Anthony Lewinstein, who's a prominent Australian journalist, wrote about in his book called Disaster Capitalism, which, you know, these are just things that have just happened in over the years.
Yeah. And following on from that, Al Jazeera is just, it's actually published an article exactly on this issue of how aid will be impacted by the sanctions. So the sanctions have been lifted against the current acting president Rodriguez herself, but there's still sanctions in place. And so, yeah, they've Al Jazeera have just had a look at how that might impact the providing aid and distribution of aid to people in need in Venezuela following the earthquake. And, yeah, of course, unsurprisingly, financial sanctions can make it difficult for non-government organisations to send money to the affected country to pay staff or suppliers. There can be additional administrative burdens that slow down the operation and make it difficult to import goods and bring staff into the country. And now in an emergency setting where time is critical to, you know, in terms of providing medical treatment and search and rescue and removing people from, you know, being crushed by buildings, like, that can cost lives. And so it is really concerning, like, in many ways, I think, and we would have spoken about this before, possibly on this show, but also Green Left has written about this before, just how unlawful those sanctions are and how they are absolutely, yeah, the devastating impact that it has on the Venezuelan people and how they're used as a real tool of repression and by other global North countries, the US, Canada, and the EU, for example, essentially make it. I mean, a lot of that was sort of about undermining the democracy that they had in Venezuela. Not to say that there weren't issues with that, and we definitely have also criticised Maduro as well for some of the things that he's done. A lot of that, those sanctions may be around kind of destabilising Venezuela and the Venezuelan people. So, yeah, no doubt these sanctions will have an impact. It's not, it's devastating that these people who've been through so much already are now having to deal with the impacts of a natural disaster, you know, when they potentially don't have the means to be able to recover without having to accept support in inverted commas from the US. So not great.
All right. So, Steph, do you want to go into the next story about the NDIS?
Yeah, sure. Now, listeners may have been following this, and we have, I think, done a couple of interviews around resisting the cuts to the NDIS that the federal Labor government are trying to just pass off as trying to contain what they've said are the blowout costs of the NDIS and cutting cracking down on fraud and things like that. But I guess for us here at Green Left Radio and for many people, we've really seen through that, and really it's just about cutting disability services, and it's going to have a disastrous impact on people who do have disabilities of varying levels and have, you know, varying needs. And and the cuts represent just a real step backwards in terms of the rights and dignity of people living with a disability in Australia. Now, thankfully, the Greens have been able to cut a deal with the government to kind of put things on hold for the moment. There's an inquiry, a Senate inquiry that's happening, and it's received more than 4,000 public submissions in just over a fortnight, and the inquiry has received grave concerns from people across the disability sector. It's good that this is being slowed down and that there's criticism for what's actually occurring, which is, people with a disability are bearing the brunt of, the crises of capitalism, as they often do. Now the deal, the inquiry is extended until August 14th in exchange for the Greens' support for tax reform, which that'll be interesting. It has meant that there's been further consultation and appropriate dissent and criticism of these cuts, which really needs to happen. So that's something.
Yeah, and I think probably one important thing is we can't be complacent. I mean, even though obviously the motion's been delayed, it's clearly on the agenda that the Albanese government is looking for some means to basically implement cuts to the NDIS.
Yeah.
And I guess probably, the most positive thing that could happen now, this is Labor White backtrack from some things. I mean, the other kind of contradiction for Labor government is the fact that, in cutting some of these supports, it's not 100% clear whether the Labor government will be able to have the arrangements in place with state governments to actually fill in the gaps, because, even the New South Wales Premier, Chris Minns, has basically said, don't expect much, which is just kind of like a classic example of how, our Labor government deliberately wants to lower any kind of expectations. You can't even expect any progressive reforms. Everything's about, cutting back.
Yeah, while also massively increasing and funneling those funds into militarisation. And that's, that's just something for everyone to keep in mind, that really the cuts that have been proposed to the NDIS are going to be funded into defence. Well, I'd say defence in inverted commas. It's not self-defence at all. It's just war. We need to continue following this closely. Make sure, you know, you're checking in with people that you might know who live with a disability who may or may not be on the NDIS. Just check in with them, because these cuts can, devastating, and also just continue to undermine the dignity and rights and value of people with a disability. And it's not okay, and we will resist. So stay tuned.
All right, well, we're getting to the end of our program. I guess I'd like to make a kind of pitch for 3CR. I mean, if you enjoyed any of the content that we've provided, who knows? Maybe you're tuning into 3CR for the first time. You might have accidentally clicked onto this while tuned into this while you're on your way to work. But you know, 3CR very much has been going through its Radiothon. It's also celebrating its 50th anniversary. We still would like to welcome any kind of donations to 3CR. For the Radiothon, we're still trying to raise as much kind of money as possible. So consider making a donation to the Radiothon, but also you can even consider becoming a subscriber to 3CR. Yeah. So, it basically costs, the subscriptions go from $40, $80 or $150 or $300 a year. Or your support, every bit of support counts. Now the other thing as well is obviously Green Left is an affiliate to this program. Green Left, is a leading source of progressive and anti-capitalist analysis of political events. Very much attempts to give a voice to all movements of resistance, whether it's the working class, First Nations movements, the Palestine Solidarity Movement. It only exists through the financial support of our supporters. So if you like the work we do, consider becoming a supporter. You can become a supporter of Green Left for as little as $5 or $10 a month.
Mm, fantastic.
All right. Any last words, Steph?
No, if listeners are available, come along to the 3CR Community Day celebration, which will be commemorating 50 years. That's 11 a.m. next Saturday at Collingwood Town Hall. We'll be there. It's going to be a lot of fun and just a great way to bring the community together. But over and out.
This brings us to the end of the show. You have been listening to Friday Morning Breakfast with Green Left Radio, brought to you by Green Left Weekly Newspaper, which brings an alternative source of information that puts people and planet before profit.
If you like our work, become a supporter from $5 per month at greenleft.org.au/support or free call 1-800-634-206.
Arise, you workers from your slumbers. Arise, you prisoners of want. For reason in revolt now thunders, and at last ends the age of Khan. Away with all your superstitions, serve all masses,
arise!
We'll change henceforth the old tradition and spurn the dust to win the prize. That's right, the commies are back. Reds underneath your beds and that crack.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.